Welcome to the Healthful Woman Podcast, the fastest growing podcast in women's health. Today's Monday, April 22nd, 2024. Today, we have the privilege of hearing part two of Miriam's birth story. Last week, Miriam spoke about how she got diagnosed with cancer during her pregnancy last year, and we ended the podcast with some of the things that others did that were helpful to her as she was going through pregnancy with her cancer. Her story picks up this week with some of the things that were not helpful, and then through her delivery and today. If you have not yet heard part one from last week, I highly recommend listening to that first. All right, a few important announcements. First, so I typically record these intros several days prior to the podcast dropping. So last week, when the podcast dropped on Monday morning, my intro did not include any mention of our listeners in Israel who were attacked by Iran the day before. Thank God the attack was stopped. So I want to tell you this week that we love you and we are wishing you peace and safety. The people in this country who are marching and yelling death to Israel, death to Jews, death to America, do not represent the rest of us in the U.S. I suppose since we are a free country, they can't get arrested for saying vile, hateful garbage, but the rest of us can certainly be just as vocal, calling them out for their hatred and stupidity. On a lighter note, I also want to give a big shout out to our friends at The Toast, to Claudia and Jackie Oshry, and all of our Toaster listeners on the occasion of their 6th anniversary of the podcast, also known as The Toastiversary. Jackie and Claudia were so gracious to invite me and my family to their party. It was a lot of fun, and it was such a treat for my girls to meet them, get some hugs, and take some great photos. All right, reminder for everyone listening on Apple or Spotify, it would be awesome if you could rate this podcast, preferably with 5 stars. Please do leave comments and suggestions. I read all of them. Also, please keep emailing us any questions you might have for our mailbag podcast. You can send them directly to hw@healthfulwoman.com or go to our website, www.healthfulwoman.com, and click on the link that says send us your questions. Please remember, these questions that you send in are for mailbag podcasts, not for personal medical advice that you need answered quickly. If you have such questions, please ask your own doctor. All right, my book with Emily Oster, The Unexpected, is being released next week. Very exciting. If you want to pre-order the book, we have links on our websites. We have a few book signings coming up on May 22nd. At 7 p.m. at the JCC of the Upper West Side of Manhattan. There's going to be event and book signing. It's a conversation with Emily and me, followed by signing of the book. So please sign up for that. We would love to see you and to meet you. I believe that the admission fee comes with a copy of the book. You can check their website for more details. Second, Washington, D.C. There's going to be an event and book signing with Emily at the Politics and Prose Bookstore on May 14th. You can check out their website for more details. Finally, to everyone who is celebrating, I want to wish all of you a wonderful Passover. All right, thanks for listening. Enjoy part two of Miriam's story. See y'all next week. Welcome to today's episode of Healthful Woman, a podcast designed to explore topics in women's health at all stages of life. I am your host, Dr. Nathan Fox, an OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist practicing in New York City. At Healthful Woman, I speak with leaders in the field to help you learn more about women's health, pregnancy, and wellness. All right, we're back with Miriam Goldman, who last week started the story of her third pregnancy from last year, 2023, where she was unfortunately diagnosed with cancer with a form of lymphoma. And we were talking about the treatments and how you're feeling and how you're dealing with it. And we ended last week's podcast talking about the things that were helpful to you. And I said, and we're going to ask you now, what was not helpful? So you mentioned one thing where people send you a text that's basically like, it's clear that they're just trying to get some reassurance that they can go about their day and not worry about you.
Right.
What else are like mistakes? Just again, this is not so much so you're welcome to just complain. God bless. This is an open forum. Do whatever you want. But for our listeners who don't always know what to do in a circumstance like this, they have a friend, a loved one who's going through something really hard, to know what the mistakes are really important, obviously. So what can you tell people happened to you or
people said to you or did for you that was really not helpful and you wish it would have been different so we can all learn from your experience?
Yeah, I think, well, a big thing, and this is my biggest red flag, is my original OB when he was breaking up with me. And he's like, well, you have cancer. And he goes, the only patient I've ever seen with cancer, they had to terminate their baby. And I literally said to him, like, you shouldn't say that to me. Like, I'm hopeful. I'm like, don't say that to me. So that is, as a doctor, I was like, he needs some social skills to go over there.
Okay.
I think right when I got my diagnosis and my first chemo, people just like swarmed, but too much. Like, it came from a good place, but everyone's like, let me do this for you today, today, today. And it was like, I'm day one. I'm overwhelmed with everything going on. And it was kind of like too much at the same time, which isn't like, this is again, like, just because everyone heard at the same time and it's people just want to be helpful, but kind of like, you know, I had some friends who later would be like, oh, I'm just going to go get yogurts for you because I know that's what your kids eat. Like, that's what I needed more than day one, everyone being like, I'll make you dinner tonight.
Right. You need a long tail.
I was like, I'm doing chemo for 6 months. Like, I need dinners for the next 6 months type of thing. Also the, oh, my friend had cancer. My this had cancer. Like, not helpful.
Yeah.
Not helpful.
Yeah. That's,
Like, I heard of a person in a town back there who once had cancer pregnant. I'm like, I don't know who that is. I don't know what type of cancer. We don't know anything about that baby. Like, not super helpful.
Did you get the Google doctors coming out of the work, like your friends? Oh, I Googled and they said, if you take this or you do this, it'll, you know, like giving you sort of alternative treatments. Did you get any of that?
I did. And I did have people that were like, you need a second opinion. You need a second opinion. You need a second opinion. And I did have second opinions. Right. Like for the oncologist, I did 2 second opinions for my OB. But I was like, at this point, I'm like, I'm already started chemo. Like, I'm full steam ahead. Like, you get on my wagon or you get off.
Right.
Like, I just need a massive support system.
Right.
Because the next 6 months are going to suck.
Wow. Wow. All right. Thank you for that. All right. So take us through the story. So we've gone, we're about mid-pregnancy. You got your port.
Right. So I, no. So after chemo one, they were talking to me about port, but I didn't get it yet. So then at 25 weeks, I had chemo two. My amazing brother and sister-in-law that live in Chicago, she's also a social worker and knew what to do, just got on a plane just to be here.
Amazing. They what neighborhood asked, in Chicago, if I may ask?
So they live in the city now.
Okay,
but
cool.
But she's from Chicago.
Oh, God bless. All right. We'll talk offline about who that is. All right.
And she sat with me all chemo two and she just sat there the whole time. And I was like, that's real support. Yeah,
just to hold your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when I started noticing, like, my smells were insane. Like, I all smells disgusted me. Like, she was eating an everything bagel and I wanted to vomit.
Wow.
And normally I don't care about those things. So I got home for week two. I took the week off of work. And again, I, like, didn't eat anything at all that whole week, which by the end of the week, you're kind of, like physically you can't walk, like, you can't do much when you don't eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
And people would bother me. You're pregnant. You have to eat. You have to eat. And I was like, they said I have to drink as long as I keep my fluids down.
Yeah.
I'm not getting hospitalized. And I made sure to drink always because I was like, I'm not getting hospitalized. Like, no way. In my second round, then I go for my port procedure, which is a surgery. And I can't get anesthesia. And it was horrible. It was probably the worst experience.
They did under local, you mean?
So they did local, but they're like veins that they need to connect.
Right.
And that's not anesthesia.
Right.
And I'm fully awake. And they put like a sheet over your face because my surgeon was like, we don't ever really do this with awake people. It was so painful. I was crying. I was screaming. Boy. But they had to keep going. And I knew that.
Right.
When I was in like the recovery room, they round and like they go over all the cases. So a random doctor is like reviewing my case out loud. And another doctor like made a face of like, does not disgust, but like, oh, poor her that she's 26 week pregnant and chemo. And I kind of like called out the doctor and I was like, you shouldn't do that. I hear you and I see you. Like, you're judging, not judging me, but like showing, I don't know how to explain it. Like, he wasn't my doctor. He was just a random OR team rounding on me and gave me like a, oh, that girl's going for like a whirlwind. And I was just like, you shouldn't do that.
Right.
Like, I see you.
Yeah. I don't know if it's pity or if it's like, I don't know, pessimism. You're like, I don't
right.
know. I don't like, you're here to take care of me.
Right.
Or to shut up and listen.
Right.
Just and to learn.
And I'm in round two and I was positive still. That's why I think I was so positive. And his face was like, oh,
yeah,
poor
don't
her.
Bring me down.
And I'm like, I'm fighting this. Like, I'm going. Like, and I'm growing this baby. I'm 25 weeks. Yeah. I'm big.
How did you keep that positive attitude? Is it just your nature or
I have
is
two
it
kids at home? It is my nature. And I have two little boys at home. And I was like, they need me. I'm also one of those like super involved moms. I do everything in my family. I'm like, I'm going to live. Like, there was no option of not living.
Right.
So I go home from the port procedure. My mom actually like helped me out the next day because I like literally couldn't move for 24 to 48 hours. I couldn't move my neck one bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can't take any pain meds except for Tylenol. So I think, you know, every time I would call, they're like, yeah, you're supposed to be on Oxy, but you can only take Tylenol. Like, we know you're in pain, but like, we can't do much about it. So that was really hard. But I was back at work 2 days later. And I went through round two. I still went to work, no problem. And again, my director was amazing. She was like, take all the time you need. Like, right. She's an oncology social worker, so she gets it.
Yeah.
So then I get sick, which was probably a random virus, but I got sick. I was coughing. I couldn't get out of bed. I showed up to work on a Monday, and at 10 o'clock, I'm like, my coworker, I'm so ill. And she goes, go to the lounge, go take a nap. She wakes me up an hour later, and she's like, are you okay? I was like, I'm like, I can't move. So she sends me home. And I remember my kids came home that day and I couldn't take care of them. My kids were like, I'm hungry. I'm like, I can't get off the couch. Like, I can't feed you. Like, I called my husband, I'm like, you got to come immediately. Like, my parents came. I'm like, I cannot take care of my kids. I was like,
it was the first time that ever happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I called the oncologist. She's like, yeah, you probably have like a virus on top of chemo and I'm pregnant and I'm not eating.
Yeah.
And that was it. I never went back to work after that because I was so ill. So for like 2 weeks, I literally didn't get out of bed. I would wake up from 7 to 8 to get my kids. Like, my husband would drive them to school or the bus stop, and I would just sleep all day.
Right.
So then I go in for round three on chemo, and I did blood work, and I was too sick to get chemo. He was like, you are really sick. Like, your blood work is not good.
Right. We're going
to
wait.
And he's like, you're coughing, you're sneezing. Like, you're not strong enough to do another round of chemo. So I go back another, like, and he's like, come back next Monday.
Is there any sort of follow-up to see if the chemo's working? Are there counts that they follow? Are there imaging that they follow? They just sort of hope for the best. Like, was there any sort of feedback about how the tumors were responding to this?
So one big thing is that my spleen was like 3 times enlarged, and you actually can feel it. Like, you can see it popping out through my skin. So he would like feel it with his fingers.
Right.
It seemed to be getting smaller. So that was one. And we did do an ultrasound on my liver at some point. Which seemed, because I was also having like bile duct issues.
Yeah.
So we were doing it for that. And it seemed to be getting a little bit smaller. But other than that, there was no testing.
So very little feedback.
Because I'm pregnant.
Right.
I'm really big by this point. So
right.
We were just like.
Right. Plus they're doing the treatment either way.
Right.
What's the difference? Okay.
Right. So at week 29, I'm like huge now.
Right.
I also should mention that after my second round, I lost my hair. And now I'm going to get emotional.
Okay.
That was the worst part of the whole thing.
Wow.
Like, for a woman, hair is their identity, and losing your hair is your scarlet letter. Everybody knows you have cancer. You can't hide it. I also have a 5-year-old.
Right.
So that's, he could not, like, when I came home, he asked me if I was a boy, which didn't hurt me because he's 5.
Right.
But I'm like, I need to, like, deal with his feelings of his mom's look different. He would say, like, I don't want you to come around my friends. Like, you're embarrassing. You look like a boy.
Right.
Which I'm never, you know, he's 5.
Yeah,
he's,
of course.
You know, but
he's processing normally.
Right.
Yeah.
And it obviously, like, I got a wig. My mom came. We all cried. But it changed me. It changed my perspective. I was still hopeful. I was like, I'm kicking ass. I just felt very like self-conscious. I'm like, everyone in the world knows. Everyone's looking at me. So when I went in for my third round and I was 29 weeks pregnant, I was now bald.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I covered my hair with like a scarf or a hat. But I'm like, I'm walking around with like this huge belly.
Right.
And now it just seemed like people knew I had cancer. It's just, it changed my perspective of like what people saw of me.
Right.
And that changed the whole thing for me, the losing of the hair.
Yeah. I mean, I guess until that point, I mean, you know, and your circle knows, but you can walk down the street and to anyone else, you're just pregnant. Right. And now this is someone with cancer is pregnant. And because everyone can see both, you can't hide either.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think also, I never felt like I fit. I'd go to these chemo appointments and I go to my oncologist and they were like, oh God, she's pregnant.
Right.
And look at me weird. And then I go to the OB office.
Oh God, she has
like,
cancer.
Oh God, she has cancer. So I was always like the odd man out of like, everyone looked at me like something was wrong with me because I never, I don't want to say fit in, but I never was normal at either perspective, which I think made it really hard.
Yeah, you're like the scariest person in both waiting rooms.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I felt that everybody was looking at me in both waiting rooms.
Right.
I'm like in this oncology suite with older people and I'm this young woman pregnant.
Right.
And in the OB office, I'm like the only one that's bald.
Right.
That doesn't have this like pretty long hair.
Right.
Part of it is like when I went to the OB office, like after a while, like granted I was going 1 to 2 times a week, like the secretary knew my name.
Yeah.
And I knew she didn't know anybody else's name. And I was like,
yeah.
I'm known in the OB office as like the girl with cancer.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. We have, it's, yeah, it's not good to be a regular in our office.
Right. And I was coming like 1 to 2 times a week.
Yeah.
Always checking on, is the baby growing?
Yeah, sure.
Also, like in the beginning, the baby was 80 percentile.
Right.
And then he just kept dropping and dropping.
And then the liver thing, the bile acids, that's like its own issue on our end. Yeah.
So then at that point also, I think it was like around 29 weeks, I started having severe itchy hands and feet.
Yep.
And I know because my sister who had twins had itchy hands.
Cold stasis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I went to the office for one of my checks. I'm like, I think I have this. So they tested me. They call me back on a Sunday, which is always a red flag. And they're like, yeah.
Not always. I give people good news on Sundays too. Yeah.
Okay, I've never gotten good news on a Sunday.
We're special. So.
And she's like, you do have it. And you probably could explain what it is more.
Yeah, it's a liver condition that anyone can get in pregnancy, where basically there's a backup of bile acids, which is not. The liver part is not harmful to the mother, but can be harmful to the baby. For you, it's a little bit different because it could have been just because you're pregnant. It could have been from the chemo, but it could have been from the cancer. So it could also be itself a problem. Not so much that your bile acids are elevated, but the cause of it being elevated could be a cancer-related thing. But either way, when it's elevated, now that ironically is more dangerous to the baby than the chemo.
Right.
And so, again, which is wacky, but that's just how it is that. And so we have to sort of watch the baby closely, which may or may not help. But ultimately, we're planning now for an early delivery.
Right. So originally my diagnosis, Dr. Barbara was like, we're going to deliver you at 37 weeks.
Right.
He's like, you got to make it to 34, but we're going to deliver you at 37 regardless.
Right.
Throughout this whole time, we also determined that I was going to have a C-section.
Right.
One, because I had larger babies before and like. I had like tearing in the other ones and one of them got their shoulder stuck.
Right.
So they're like, we're going to do a C-section, A, because you have bigger babies, and B, we get to monitor the situation. Like everything is in a controlled setting of like your blood work.
Right.
So once I got this liver issue, they're like, okay, now we're delivering you 36 weeks.
Right.
And I was like, okay, it keeps getting earlier. Like we don't want the baby to come out, but okay, we'll keep monitoring. They put me on meds. So the itchiness was bearable.
Right.
But like between the oncologist worried about the liver, you guys worried about the liver.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, we're just like, and then at that point I started coming in twice a week. So we're still plowing through. It's also the summer now. So I'm like sweating all the time. I'm big.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I go at 32 weeks for chemo number 4. Also, my blood work at this point just kept dropping and dropping and dropping, which is expected in chemo. But my platelets were getting so low that we had to come up with a plan for an epidural in the OR.
Right, to get them up.
So I even met with the anesthesiologist before to be like, if your platelets are below a certain point, like we're going to have to intubate you and like what that's going to look like. So I was kind of ready.
Yeah.
And we spoke to my oncologist and he said that I need to give 1 week of no chemo and my numbers will go up. He's like, just give her a week break.
Right.
So I do my chemo 4. And at this point I was sleeping for about 14 to 16 hours a day. I would wake up 1 hour in the morning to get my kids to school, sleep all day, wake up at like 12 to eat a little bit, if I even could tolerate that, and then sleep until my kids came home. And then I was awake with them at night and, you know, interactive and out of bed and like doing everything I could. And then I'd go back to bed. And I met with the nutritionist because everyone was just trying to get me to eat and eat and eat. I probably gained 2 pounds this whole pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I just like couldn't eat.
Yeah.
Even a barber scared me. He's like, you need to eat protein because you're going to have a surgery. Like you're going to have to recover from a C-section.
Right.
So I tried on my week 3s, I would try to eat a little bit here and there, but I was just sleeping like all the time. Mm-hmm. Friends would come over. Some of my amazing friends would drop off food for my kids because I was like, I'm not making food for my kids.
Right.
My parents would come over at night times. They would do the nights with my kids. Like I couldn't even like bathe my children at this point. And I'm also like pregnant. I'm big.
Right.
So week 35, like, so my chemos are always on a Monday. So I go to the OB on Monday. I'm finally not on chemo. My blood work is back and it's much better. Like everything went up. I mean, better is relative, but like I could probably get an epidural.
Right.
So that Thursday, so I'm week 35 and 5 days, I stopped feeling the baby. Like I just didn't feel him anymore. I had an appointment on Friday because at this point, I think I was coming in every other day. I met with the high risk doctor. And so we did the ultrasound, the baby's moving, but I was like, I didn't freak out because he had hiccups.
Right.
So like Thursday all night, I don't feel him, but I have hiccups. So I'm like, he's alive. He's hiccuping. Right. So I go in and the high risk was like, I don't love that you can't feel him. And I was already scheduled next week on Wednesday. So I scheduled like 36-4. She's like, maybe we should do like 36-1, 36-0, like Sunday or Monday, but like go to the regular OB and see what he says. So I like call my husband in between. I was like, okay, so we might be having this baby like earlier. We also had a wedding on Saturday of his best friend. So we were like, we really want to go to this wedding on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll have a birth like Sunday morning, like right. if we could plan this. So I go upstairs to Dr. Bender. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. And he basically sat me through and he's like, if you want to have the baby today, like we could, like it's totally up to you. But also that week I got my steroid shots.
Right.
So they wanted to give those like,
yeah.
they wanted to be like, I think I got them on Wednesday and Thursday and now yeah. it's Friday. So they're like, we right. want to give it a day or two for yeah. them to work a little more because we knew this baby was coming early. So he's like, also you just ate. So you got to wait to have your C-section anyway, so you can go home. Like, he's like, you can call me in 2 hours and come back right. if you need to have your baby. And I was like, okay. So I go home on Friday and I'm with my family on Friday night. I do not feel this baby like one bit, but I was like, it's Friday night. I hate Friday night. Like I'm not going right. to pass it on Friday night.
Right.
And we were supposed to leave on Saturday morning to this wedding that we had on Long Island. So I was like, let's just go to bed and we'll see what happens in the morning. So I wake up on Saturday and I was like, I didn't feel a baby once. I was like, this is what we're going to do. We'll drop the kids off at your parents. Like we plan. We'll pack a hospital bag and a wedding bag. We'll go to the hospital. If they say we're having a baby, fine. If not, we'll go to the Hamptons and go to this your best friend's wedding.
Right.
And at this point, he's like texting his best friend every hour, like the updates, because he's right. like, it's his yeah. best friend. He wants to go to the wedding. And I was like, I won't eat. So I'm like prepped in case just there's in a case. C-section. Yeah. I'm like, I don't have to wait. But I'm like very calm at this point because I was like still feeling hiccups. So I like wasn't worried. Right. I'm just like, I'm not feeling the baby. We go into the city. We park the car. Like we're very chill. His parents are freaking out. Also, my parents are Sabbath observers. So we didn't tell anybody what's going right. on. So like his family's freaking out. My family doesn't know anything. We're not in communication with them.
Right.
We go in to OB, whatever. They hook us up. And Dr. Doe comes in a few like yeah. minutes later. And she's like, I don't love how the baby looks. It's moving. Its heart rate's fine. But I don't love it. Like I can keep you here for 24 hours to like monitor everything and get it right. But like, you're giving birth in 4 days anyway. You're so high risk. There's so much going on. Like, we're just going to have a baby today. And I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah. Like, I'm already fasting. I'm yeah. starving. Like, let's have yeah. this baby. Like, I wasn't an emergency. So I was like very chill. Also, like, granted, like, I looked weird looking back at pictures. Because again, like, I come in with like no hair. I had no eyebrows. I had yeah. no eyelashes. Like, yeah. I looked pretty awful. But yeah. like, I didn't think about that about myself. I'm just like, let's have this baby.
Right. I mean, you say you look awful. You don't look awful. You're a warrior. I mean, you look yeah. like someone who's going through like right. hell and back to have this baby.
Right.
So on our end, you look awesome. We're right. like, you're almost 36 weeks. This baby's doing great. You're alive. Like, I remember that Saturday morning because I remember, you know, we have people with cancer and pregnancy. We don't have a lot, right? Because thank God doesn't happen that often. But I remember the email saying, here's the deal. And everyone's like, deliver. Like enough.
Right.
You know, like this is going to be a win, like take the win.
Right.
And so it was, yeah. So we view it a little, I know you feel like I look, this is not how I look, but for us, we're like, this is a rock star who just came in. So right. let's do this.
And at the moment I was so worried about my platelets again, because yeah. I was like, what's going to be my anesthesia plan? And they came back high enough that I can get epidural. So I was like, that's a win. And I look back now, but I was very concerned of like, can I wear my scarf in the OR? I'm like, I don't want to go into the OR bald. Right. And like, everyone has that classic yeah. picture and I want to be able to like remember it. Like
yeah.
these were the things that were bothering me looking back at silly, but no, at that not. It was important to
it's
me.
Not, it's not silly. Not at all. This right. is your, this is your life. This is your memory. It's your birth. Like, and you've been through so much. You,
right.
you deserve a picture that you want. Right. You know what I mean? Like you deserve a picture that you're going to be proud of in a certain sense that like, this is great.
Right.
And so yeah, absolutely.
Right.
We're bringing a makeup artist. We're bringing yeah. anybody. Who do you need? You know?
Right.
Yeah. 100%.
Right. So we tell his family, like, we're having a baby today. We tell right. his friend we're not coming to the wedding.
Right. I hope they forgave you.
Yeah. And now we know his anniversary because it's our child's birth.
Fair.
Also, like at some point there was like a major emergency. So that like Dr. Doe comes in apologizing that we're postponed. And as somebody in healthcare, I'm like, I don't care as long yeah. as I'm not the emergency.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
okay, I'm hungry, but like, who yeah. cares? Like
right.
I am like health. I mean, relative healthy compared to this
yeah.
woman
who's yeah.
being like emergently sent to the OR.
It's ironic. You're like, I'm the good one here.
Right. Yeah. Like, yay. When you have a scheduled C-section, you like literally walk into the OR.
Yeah.
But at this point, this is my third surgery this year
right.
that I've walked into an OR.
Right. But at least this one you get anesthesia for. You get an epidural.
Thank God. And I was like, send all the medications my way because
right.
once that baby is out,
yeah.
give me everything.
Yeah, drug me.
Yeah. yeah. She was, and I've had obviously epidurals before, yeah. but your husband's on the room, you're in the OR yourself.
Yeah.
Dr. Doe was amazing.
Yeah.
She put me, you know, and from my end, the C-section seemed relatively okay.
Mm-hmm.
My blood pressure kept dropping.
Okay.
And I can see that. And I know how to read blood pressure.
Yeah.
So that was like a little worrisome. But like they had obviously the NICU in there because he's 35 weeks old.
Yeah.
Plus he had chemo. Meanwhile, he comes out screaming his lungs out.
It's amazing. Did he have to go to the NICU?
He never went to the NICU. He was 6'2", which is big for a 35-weeker. Yeah. But I have big babies, thank God.
Yeah.
The NICU ended up like leaving the OR after a while that my husband was like, why am I holding him for so long? Like, what am I supposed to do with his baby?
Right.
And you're there for like an hour being sewn up.
How long were you guys in the hospital after that?
5 days.
Uh-huh.
Like we took the whole 5 days, which they
just to watch, meaning you didn't need anything different.
So there were complications with the baby after.
Ah, okay.
So like this
breathing and this and
that. No. Yeah. So like the actual like recovery was like, fine, you go to room, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The next day when they do blood work on the baby, they find out he has no immunity.
Okay.
He had no neutrophil.
Which makes sense.
Which makes sense because I had none either.
Right.
And that was, but with the chemo, I was also getting immunotherapy.
Right. So that's a side effect.
Right.
Correct.
So they call the pediatric hematologist who said he's never seen such a severe case.
Right.
Because how many babies have
exposed
you seen
to six,
that have seen chemo?
Yeah.
So he didn't go to the NICU. They called the NICU to take him immediately. The NICU refused unless he had a fever.
Right. They had to just isolate him so he couldn't get infected, basically.
Right. But he needed this specialized medication to help your white count that
like
I was on, but we couldn't get a pharmacy that would give it to him. Plus, he technically had no insurance. He's a newborn, so I had to pay for it privately.
What?
Yeah, and it's expensive. And
the newborn's under your insurance.
Not yet, because he didn't have a birth certificate or a social security number yet. That's what my insurance said.
Not true.
And this is what I do.
Hashtag fake news.
They reimburse you later.
Oh, yeah. All right, fine.
But till we figured it out, and they don't let you leave the hospital until you have, confirmed.
You mean to get it as an outpatient?
Yes.
I thought you meant in the hospital.
Oh, no, no. They were giving it to him.
I see. You mean the pharmacy. Okay, I got it.
So I need to get the outpatient, and the nurse had to teach me
how to give
a shot to my 5-day-old, 5-week-old premature baby.
That's fun. Yeah.
And I'm a mom and I'm a warrior. So I did it. And I was like, of course I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So we needed that extra few days to get him his medication.
Okay.
I was like, I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
My baby's still here.
Yeah.
But I was still, I felt that like I was that like icky patient that the nurse was like, oh, I don't want her because I'm like the cancer one. And also like I passed out the first day after my C-section and like I have a port still. So everyone's like, you know what I mean? Like when they just,
you're different.
I'm complicated from a medical perspective.
You're out of the box, out of their wheelhouse.
Yeah.
It's not like anyone's afraid of you. It's not like anyone doesn't like you. It's just like, whoa, it's like, I got to think of things that I don't normally think of, which is hard.
Right.
Right.
And
so,
of course I look different.
Yeah.
Although one of the nutritionist, person bringing food, when she saw that I had cancer, she was like, oh, you're getting double everything. Like my boyfriend has cancer. You need to eat everything.
Yeah.
So there was support here and there. We then went home when he was 5 days old, like no problem. Of course, like very close pediatrician follow up because his white count was like a huge issue. We were in a full bubble, like no one came in, no one came out.
Right.
We hired a night nurse because I needed help.
Yeah.
I also was not allowed to breastfeed.
Right.
Because I had chemo in me and I was starting again.
Right.
So the night nurse made sense because I wasn't breastfeeding ever.
Right.
Which was a choice taken away from me. And that's like a piece to process also.
Yeah.
And the only thing was that, like, in the Jewish world, we do a bris, which is like a circumcision on day 8. And he was not cleared for that because they were like, we'll never do a surgery with no white count.
Yeah. How long did it take?
It was about 3 weeks.
Okay. And also, he was a preemie. So 3 weeks, it's what he would have been full term. So.
Right.
Wow. So, wow.
And then I did 2 rounds of chemo.
Yeah. Of course. After. Yeah. Tell me about he's born and he comes out and he's healthy and you've made it through surgery. Right. So you still have a ways to go, but that hump is sort of crossed. What was that like for you?
Well, I remember in the OR, like the minute you hear him screaming, I couldn't stop crying. But like silent tears streaming down my face of like immense relief.
Yeah, you did it.
Like he's alive.
Yeah.
And like he was crying. And like, yes, we knew he was okay. But like, did we really know he was okay? Like he's getting chemotherapy, but I can't drink wine. So like him coming out crying was like such a relief. Once I got home, there was a massive sense of relief because I'm like, alone, I could fight anything.
Right.
Like, I can fight cancer on my own. It was always like this baby, like how, and I couldn't protect him.
Right.
Because I didn't know, like, he was inside of me. So there was a huge, like, I'm going to finish this, like, no issues. I'm going to fight it. But the hard part is, like, I have to take care of a newborn.
Yeah.
And I'm really sick.
Yeah, you've got a job to do now
and
also.
That's really hard. Like, my schema with everything before with a newborn at home was, like, even harder after that.
Wow. How you doing now?
Now I'm great. I mean, I did my last 2 rounds. I'm in total remission. I had finally a PET scan for my first one because I could have all the radiation I want now.
Mm-hmm.
totally in remission, just, you know, constant follow-up. My baby is totally healthy. He's perfectly chunky. He has two teeth and he just like crawls around the whole house.
Amazing. Well, you look terrific.
Thank you.
I mean, you look terrific. And it's just, it's amazing that you had this a year ago. Right? Yeah. We're talking about literally, I mean, less than a year ago, obviously, because the baby's only 9 months old. You look back on this, right? I'm gonna ask you a few questions about this. How has it changed you as a person, as a parent, as a social worker, as a friend, as anything? How has this impacted you in a way that's tangible that you could articulate?
First of all, I never knew how strong I was. Like I am, and everyone's like, how are you so strong? I didn't know this. Like right. I never knew I could do this. If someone told me I had to, I would have said, I won't do it.
Right.
But I had to, and I look back and I'm like, I could do anything.
Right.
Like I'm really strong, but I have so much empathy. I've been a provider for 10 years and to then flip it and be a patient. I also got hospitalized twice, like after the baby was born.
Yeah.
So I was really a patient, and to see the empathy, like I just have so much empathy for patients that I work with, for anybody going through any illness, whether it's big or small. I mean, I have friends that are going through something so small, but like to them it's big. And now I could see that. Of like anything little to somebody else could be big, and like the empathy that you really need to provide for people and the space to just like let them vent, show support, whatever that can mean to somebody.
That's amazing. What is it you would like our listeners to take away from this story?
One is like, you really don't know what other people are going through. Like you sit in an OB office and you see someone next to you, like you don't know what anyone's going through. So like, I want to say like show compassion, but of course you can't in like an office, but just in the world, like you don't know what your friends are going through behind the scenes. Like we hid this for a while until we figure this out. Even my son at school, like his friends who are five didn't know how hard this was for him. So like, you really don't know what people are going through. And I think I did this podcast because like when I went through this, I didn't know anyone who's ever done this before. I have no friends in their 30s who had cancer. I never heard of anyone in my life getting pregnant and cancer and like surviving this. And it's like, I need people to know that there's someone who did this. I did it. You could do it. There's support. Like there are ways to get through it. And if I could do it, know that you're not alone. If this ever, God forbid, happens to anybody.
Yeah. You just preempted my last question, which is why did you decide to tell the story? But that's it. You know,
yeah.
People should know that it can end well. It can.
Right.
You know, and it frequently does, which is hard to see at the front end. And yeah, people have a lot more strength than they think they have, which is amazing. I mean, it's amazing to see someone have all that strength. It's amazing to be a person who has all that strength and to know that people can do it. And you know, here you are, you're, like we said, you're young, you're healthy. There's nothing wrong with you in the world. And suddenly you have this, the greatest challenge like ever. And here you are, you know, you're plus later on the other side and you're great and your baby's great. And it's like, what a ride, what a crazy thing. And thank God you're okay. And it is amazing though. And to go through that and to be able to talk about it and tell that story is very helpful to others. So I do appreciate it very much.
Yeah. And it took me like 6 months to process it until I was like, I'm ready. And I mean, even I still, you know, tear up or break down with certain pieces, but like you really also need to really think about it and process it for yourself, for your spouse, who's, you know, he's raising a sick wife and two kids,
right?
And then your kids as well, and their perspective. And like now we sit down and we process like what a year we had.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. I know our listeners are going to appreciate it. It's an amazing story. Thank God you're well. And it's great to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Healthful Woman Podcast. To learn more about our podcast, please visit our website at www.healthfulwoman.com. That's healthfulwoman.com. If you have any questions about this podcast or any other topic you would like us to address, please feel free to email us at hw@healthfulwoman.com. Have a great day. The information discussed in Healthful Woman is intended for educational uses only. It does not replace medical care from your physician. Healthful Woman is meant to expand your knowledge of women's health and does not replace ongoing care from your regular physician or gynecologist. We encourage you to speak with your doctor about specific diagnoses and treatment options for an effective treatment plan.